This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Really 007.
So, hi, I am Tom Pickup, and welcome to the Really 007 podcast again for this special episode dedicated to the sensational Cue the Music show, the number one James Bond music tribute act. Now, you can find us, Really 007, and listen in on iTunes and Spotify, and we are on all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I believe Cue the Music are too. So simply search Really 007 Pod or Cue the Music Show. Now, tonight, I'm joined by regular contributors and my two of my three brothers. So I've got Matthew and I've got Harry here. Good evening, gents.
Good evening to you.
Very good evening.
Now, yes, so we are joined tonight by Warren Ringham, who is the guy who started it all. And he'll tell us all about that journey to where we are today for Cue the Music. So if you don't know who they are an extremely world-renowned tribute to the James Bond music. If you know anything about Bond music, you want to hear them, basically. Now, not only do they perform the songs from the films, but they also produce some of the brilliant score material, too, with a full orchestra, which, growing up, we absolutely loved. We had all the soundtracks on CD, and it's just amazing to hear them. So, yes, they've performed across the globe for many years at venues, small, like intimate, small, private ones, and some huge venues as well. But they're now bowing out, so it's very sad to say. We'll hear more about that, with a series of concerts across the UK. So, good evening, Warren. Great to see you.
Good evening.
Yeah.
Nice to be here. I'm really full. I've never been interrogated by a family on one of this will be a new experience.
We're all family, Warren. We're all family.
Yeah, part of the Bond family. Yeah. It wasn't intended that way, really. It was just chance who could turn up on the night. But we're all delighted to be here, Warren.
The Mitchell brothers do Bond.
Mum will be on soon.
She was actually a musician. Yeah. She was actually, she went to the Royal Academy of Music and did piano and flute and piano teacher for many years. Yeah.
Mm.
Awesome.
She loves Bond music in that way. But yeah.
Yeah. I bet.
So, in terms of your musician training, how did you get involved with all that then?
Well, funnily enough, I went to the Royal College of Music, which is, you know, not twinned, but it's kind of the sister of the Royal Academy. Yeah. Mm. So when you say that, my ears kind of prick up quite quickly. But as I always sort of say on these podcasts, really my background came from coming in a long line of family members that were professional brass players. My great aunt Maisie was principal trombone of the Halle Orchestra, back in the, I think, the 40s or 50s. And, you know, very famous trombone player. And then she was followed much later on in the century by my dad, who was a professional trumpet player who played in the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra and the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and did quite a lot of film work, including Return of the Jedi and Interview with a Vampire, all the original Mad Max films. And if you're a football fan, he is one of the players on that Champions League theme. If you know the
Handles,
it's Straight Up the Priest based on that, isn't it?
That's right. That's very true. I tell you a quick, really quick, funny story. Actually, not one I told before. So this is a nice new one for these podcasts. But
exclusive.
Not really Bond related though. But when he did that Champions League theme, it was one of the last times when the orchestras were offered the choice of either having a buyout where they could get a one-off fee or they could get royalties.
Oh, hey.
And it was decided, they put it to a vote, and the orchestra decided to go for the one-off fee, which was quite a big fee. It was like, you know, it might have been like 300, 400 quid, which 25, 30 years ago was a lot of money. But you think, for that, I mean, it would have been...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting sunk on the playground, that.
Yeah. But then the other one that is relevant, which is really, really cool. He actually was principal trumpet on one of the John Barry albums. About two John Barry albums, if you know the movie Ola, one and two.
Mm-hmm.
TD.
His classical albums, yeah.
Yeah, you can hear a few. There's a few trumpet solos in there, which is my dad, which is like I'm super proud of.
Oh wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I grew up with that, you know, just like really all around me, and had all this access to incredible teaching my childhood was brought up around the orchestra and sessions, and I can remember being at places like CTS. I mean, there's a good chance, and I'm not saying that I definitely did, but there's a good chance I could have been at some of those sessions. But I mean, when I was young, you know, in my childhood, I took those kind of things for granted. You just went along with, because it's your dad, it's work, you don't know any different. And it wasn't until kind of I got older and I started to realize actually how privileged and lucky I was to do that. But it was too late to kind of go back and think, well, what ones did I go to? But that's how I sort of really got into it. And when I kind of got to a point after school, I went off to music college. And from there, my Bond fandom kind of went into overdrive. There was that, I don't know how old you guys are, whether you're a bit younger than me, but there was the ITV run back in the 90s.
Yes.
What did they call it? It was called the, was it 00 Heaven or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Do you remember they ran one film every single week?
It was Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. It was a Wednesday. Yeah. And I had my video recorder at home.
Oh,
and
wow.
Every single film. And although I'd seen lots and lots of Bond films through my childhood, I hadn't seen them all. And that was the point when they ran that series. And that was when I just was, you know, I was hooked, totally.
Oh,
and the two things, and just quickly, the two things kind of married. They kind of married up, music and Bond, and that's how Cue the Music was
amazing.
Well, then, so good. I was just going to say, did you realise, of course, that your dad had been working with John Barry? I mean, that's
no. Do you know what tragic? Like, my dad died in 1999, and didn't actually piece it together that he was even on the movie soundtracks till some years after that. So yeah, that was a shame. But like I said, I don't really, you know, wallow in it or anything. I'm more just happy that I know that now and I've got that to listen to. And as a huge John Barry fan, it's amazing that you know, have that link, and he did that.
I'm sure be very proud of what you've done as well. I mean, it's incredible. So
definitely.
Obviously, it's a prerequisite if you form a Bond, you know, concerts guy, an orchestra and singers and everything. You need to be a Bond fan, don't you?
Is it a prerequisite?
People joining it? I don't.
Do you know what? There are quite a few cropping up now, and I see some of them doing quizzes and stuff. And I mean, there was one. I shouldn't say this really, but there was one Bond concert where someone had gone along to interview them. They did a little quiz, and two of the first two questions they asked them was, what was the first ever James Bond film? And they had no idea. And the second question was, what's the actual name of the character Q? And they had no idea. And I thought, wow, that is red awesome, man. You know, if you come
so we're pretty sad though, aren't we? I mean, to a casual fan, you don't know an awful lot, do you?
No, but I think though, if you're running a show like ours, I think that I've always sold it as by fans for fans.
Yes.
So what would I want to go see if I was going to see a Bond concert? What would I as a fan want to see? And that's always my starting point. My baseline is that I want to give you guys something that I know that you want. And I think if you haven't got that real authenticity, you can't like blag that. You can't make that up. You haven't got that real authenticity of like 30 years of just watching those films hundreds and hundreds of times and listening to all the podcasts and going to events and going to locations and all that stuff. If you haven't got all that behind you, then really all you're doing is chucking some Bond songs together and slapping a price on the ticket. You know, there's, I think what we do is certainly done from much more point of view of love and authenticity and, you know, really trying to provide a, like create a space where we, as a Bond fan, you can really go and enjoy that love and experience it and feel like you're in a place where people get it and they share that same passion that you do.
Because you, I mean, there are orchestras who every now and then will do a Bond night, you know, they'll do, but that's not the same. This is your, you know, very being, isn't it? It is.
Do you know, in some ways, you know, that's been the hardest thing is getting people to understand where we're different. Because when you kind of compare Cue the Music, which is in essence, most of the shows, it's a 13 piece band versus the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, for example. I mean, my love for the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra goes back 30, 40 years. And my dad, we've just got a guest joining us.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Hello.
Good evening. Nice to hear from you all.
Yeah, you too, Caroline. We're absolutely bowled over that you're here with us tonight. It's a great surprise for us. I mean, this, if you don't know, is the host of the Bradford Concert of Cue the Music. It's Caroline Munro, who, of course, played Naomi in Spy Who Loved Me. So, I can't believe it.
Yeah, this is incredible, yeah.
Well, it's lovely to be joining you tonight. I mean, it's very muggy down here in London. Yeah. Where is it? How is it where you are?
We're up north, and it's very muggy here.
It is.
For me.
It is.
Yeah, it's a lovely summer's evening here in Yorkshire, where I am.
Are you actually in Bradford? Are you actually in Bradford?
I'm close. I'm in Leeds. I'm close to Bradford, and I've got my ticket, and I will be seeing the concert in Bradford without a doubt.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic! Maybe I'll meet you after or before.
We'd love to.
It'll be amazing.
It'd be brilliant.
I love Leeds. I spent a lot of time in Leeds at YTV, Yorkshire Television.
Yeah.
A good few years ago, but yeah, love it. Nice place.
Wow.
We've got one chap on our podcast called John, who is honestly your number one fan. So he'd love to meet you at Bradford. He would absolutely love that.
Yeah, he would.
Will he be listening now?
He won't be listening now, but he will. He won't believe it when we tell him that we've spoken to you. He'll be very jealous. But
yeah, he'll be raging.
Hopefully, he can meet him in Bradford.
I hope so. Hope he's there. That would be lovely to meet him. That would be really good.
Thank you for joining us.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not at all.
So, Warren, how did you get Caroline involved in all this? It's amazing.
Well, it kind of just all happened probably about 5 years ago, I think now, Caroline, wasn't it? Yeah, we met at a Bond event and we just hit off a great relationship along with Madeline Smith, who was at the same event. Mm. And you both sort of, it's easier for you to say than me say, but you kind of became fans first, didn't you, of what we were doing?
We so did. I remember the event so well. It was actually at Pinewood Studios, wasn't it? Do you remember?
Yeah.
And a lot of people had sort of gone off because we'd heard you and we just came to see it and we were so enthusiastic because you're so amazing. I mean, the band, we were just absolutely blown away by the music and you and, you know, everybody, the singers, and it was a whole different thing. So, yes, we became big fans of Cue the Music, absolutely.
Yeah, and then you came along to, I don't know, another show, a couple of shows
that
we were doing and we just became good friends, and I sort of said, look, would you do us the honour of coming and comparing, which was funny because you were a bit sort of, oh, are you sure? And I always get
elephants in my tummy, so but I actually I love it because the audiences are so warm and so, you know, they're just up for the a really good time and amazing musicianship and the singing and Warren's, you know, playing. It all just comes together. And of course, the tunes are so classic. They're just so wonderful. So what's not to like? It, and to be a little part of it is wonderful. It's great.
Yeah,
I sometimes get it wrong. I sometimes come on when I shouldn't do. I do various things. I'm very dyslexic. But I love to be part of it. And Warren kind of goes, you know, he's very, very good. He's brilliant with me anyway.
But the lovely thing about it is, though, Caroline, is that with yourself and Maddie and Caroline Bliss, is that you're all able to bring your wonderful experiences to the show and tell the audience what it's like to work on a Bond film. And for all of us, all the four of us geeks here on the call now, you know, we all remember those iconic scenes that you did. And it's so cool to hear you talking about them. And that's what you get to on the shows, isn't it? You get a little bit of you telling some of your funny stories.
You do, a little bit of an insight, as to what it, and yes, for all of us different experiences, but all of us amazing experiences, because they're just kind of classic, aren't they? The Bond films are classic music.
Oh,
And obviously, my Bond was Roger.
I
absolutely adored him. For me, he is the best. But,
he is the best.
All of them bring, they all bring something completely different. They all do their own take on it. As do the women, too. You know, the women are, you know, the women bring their own, whatever it is, their own personalities to the role, within the role. And as did the Bond, you know, Roger, he was fantastic. And I think Spy was one of his, I believe he's been quoted as saying that was his favourite Bond for him.
One of ours too.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's nice.
Caroline, can I ask you, does it feel extra special when Cue the Music play both Nobody Does It Better and then Bond 77, particularly Bond 77, because that is blasting away when it's the helicopter chase and the, you know, so the Lotus scene.
It's a car chase. I find that really exciting. In fact, I think the one time I was listening to it so much that I actually forgot to come in and see you. The music.
You were back in the helicopter.
That's their flying. I thought, this time I'm going to get him. But it's very exciting, and Nobody Does It Better. It's Terry Schultz that sings it. It's just it's beautiful. I mean, for the vocals on it. Everything. Fantastic.
I was telling you this the other day, wasn't I? You know, I was telling you when one of the times that Maddie didn't come on, she forgot to come on, and I, well, as quick as a flash, I went on. I went on the microphone to the audience, and I said, "I think she's still locked in the wardrobe."
Yes, that was good.
Very good.
And then she heard that. She thought, "Oh, that's the thing." Yes, because you get so carried away listening to it. You know, you're listening to it. You forget you're actually a bit of a part of it. I should just get chucked on, I believe. But it's a wonderful show to be part of.
But it makes it even more authentic that this is proper Bond music when you've got Bond girls actually, you know, comparing it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I suppose it does, really, doesn't it? Kind of gives it a it does. You're right. Yes, it actually
I've got
does.
I've got close friends who've been to a few Cue the Music concerts, and they were telling me recently that they're coming to the Bradford one, and this is before I got tickets, and they're like, you know, they do all the songs, all the music and all that, and you'll never believe it, Caroline Munro comparing, and that was like the icing on the cake.
Caroline, I knew it was a good decision to get you on board. Coming for us, coming for you.
That's very sweet. No, not at all. it goes hand in hand. As I say, to be a little part of it is very special. You know, it's nice. And to hear it all again. I'm dancing on this. I'm watching from the... from the wings, and I'm just dancing on the side. I love it, singing away. As long as the music doesn't stop and my mic turned on and suddenly hit this awful boom, that would be awful. But it's a brilliant show. Highly recommend it.
Caroline, can you remember the first time you heard Nobody Does It Better? Was it at the premiere or a film or something? Or did you hear it? Because Maddie heard Live and Let Die on the stage before anybody else heard it. But do you remember when you heard yours?
You mean actually the premiere, 7777, which was our premiere Odeon Leicester Square, which is very strange. And that's the first time I heard it. I just thought it was incredible. That is the first time I heard it. And all the audience stood up when the Union Jack, when Roger leapt off the side of the mountain and the Union Jack. And they actually stood up and cheered, as did I, because I had to. So, I thought that's pretty cool. It was wonderful. It really was. But that's the first time I heard it. And it's a brilliant song because you kind of hear it everywhere, really. In supermarkets, I hear it. I still hear it.
Yeah.
It is.
And I was with a lady. She's called Lady Bond. I was with at the weekend in Lake Lucerne. We were doing a Bond. Myself and Martin Beswick. Isn't it beautiful?
Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a whole thing. It was a black tie event and everybody was dressed. And there was a lady called Lady Bond, who's a German singer-performer. She plays piano.
I've seen her.
Does it better.
Have to look her up. Yeah,
she's so good. It was lovely. Very different take, you know, quite a modern sort of jazzy take, but very different. And yes, it was so good to hear it again.
Jaws, isn't it? It's still on, you know, like on Smooth FM. It was in their top 500, whatever, of all time. I think it's the one that's most played on the radio these days, even now. And it's 45 years, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
The anniversary.
Really, I think it is.
Yeah.
Mm. Is it really 45 years, golly?
Yeah, so, yeah. Mm. Wow.
Kind of seems like yesterday if I look back. If I look back at it, but yeah. It does and it doesn't. It's strange where the years have gone. But yes, it's still there. And, you know, my memories are still with me. And of course, the proof is that the films are still being played and the music is still being, you know, hailed as wonderful. So it's great. Well, all of the music, you know, all the Bond songs.
Well, they're all on at the cinema. I don't know whether you know, they're showing one a week at the moment.
Are they?
Just have a look, because The Spy Loved Me will be on in a few weeks, actually.
Yeah.
Is it because it's the 60th anniversary, isn't it?
Yes, that's what they do.
Yeah, isn't it?
Started a few weeks ago, and then they're working all through.
18th of June.
Oh, really?
Caroline.
Yeah. 18th.
Whereabouts?
Everywhere. I think it's Odeon.
Odeon and View.
Cineworld and View, yeah. So
I don't know about Cineworld. I think Odeon and View.
Mainly Odeon and View, yeah.
Odeon. Yeah. Maybe I should go and try and see it at the Odeon in Leicester Square again.
Well,
that'd
be cool.
Just turn up and everyone will go mad, won't they? That'll be brilliant.
I don't think so. Believe me, I don't think so. But yes, I could certainly listen to it. That would be nice.
Well, Warren, you are performing it, I hope, at these concerts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, you can't not do Nobody Does It Better.
Yeah.
But Bond 77 these days is tricky, because the thing is that every time another Bond film gets made, which is, by the way, obviously amazing.
Not as often now.
No, but when they do, it's like it's another song on the set list. You know, the Bond is running into a two-day event before much longer.
A weekender. You'll be doing a weekend.
You obviously do the new one, don't you? The new film.
Yeah.
Yes, of course you do, Billie Eilish. Yeah.
But it gets harder because we like doing the special items and, you know, you have to be careful because it does get a bit long. That's what I'm saying. Our final show in the West End, we're not going to do all of the songs. We're going to cut a few, keep obviously all the really big hitters and then put in a load of really cool other music as well. But I'll tell you, I won't tell you too much about that last program.
No.
It's going to be a surprise, but Nobody Does It Better will still be in there, of course. And
you.
That's good. That's good.
You'd boo if you didn't play it. Probably.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely amazing. No, we're looking forward to that. And are you at Bradford and one other? Is that right, Caroline?
I am. I'm Bradford and then the one in London.
Yeah.
With the other girls, with the two, with Maddie and Caroline. Of two course. Carolines, one Maddie.
Yeah. Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. No, that should be great. No, I'm looking forward to that because I missed the London one the last time. Hadn't been very well, so I missed that one.
Oh, sorry.
But Caroline, yes, no, Caroline Bliss admirably stepped in and is fantastic. She's a lovely lady too. Yeah. She's lovely. Maddie, I've known Maddie since the 60s, so we go back a long way.
There's like a sisterhood of Bond ladies, isn't there? It seems to be.
It actually is. It really is. And as I was saying before, everyone is so different. But when we get together, we really do bond. You know, it's a bonding that we do. It's sort of like a club, but it isn't a club. You know, not a precious club, not a pretentious club. But it's a lovely, lovely thing because we did the charity event and there were so many. Trina Park flew over from...
Yeah, we've spoken to her. She's lovely.
Yeah, Trina, she is great. Trina and Mariam came up and Carol Ashby. So many came along for that Bond event 2 weeks. Well, not last weekend, the weekend before. And it was so special. You know, it was amazing. It was so good.
Martine Beswick's a really good friend of yours as well, isn't she?
Oh. She's my bestie. Oh. Yeah, she's she's fantastic.
Wow.
I was with her in Lucerne, so yes, we go back a long way. But she's fabulous. She's so good. She's so strong and beautiful, but funny and witty. And they all are. They're all so different. The women, they're fantastic. And I was with Jenny Hanley was there. Valerie Leon. This was at Talking Pictures when we did the Talking Pictures. So there was Valerie, Maddie, myself, Martine, and Jenny Hanley. We were all at an event the weekend before as well.
Amazing.
On the Sunday. Yeah, it was great to see them all.
Oh.
Brilliant.
You must be sad, though, that Cue the Music are coming to an end.
Yes, I mean, never say never. I'm just saying that. Nothing, Warren, you have your own thoughts. It's just my thoughts. Never say never. But we know that.
Sean taught us that, if nothing else.
Exactly. You know,
this is it. And, you know, if something changes in the future, then something changes. But I can't, you know, at the moment, certainly for the next several years, I've got kids to think about.
Yeah. I was going to say, everybody's got lives to lead and things to do. But music's in your blood, Warren.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it's always there. Yeah. Yeah, and there's other things. I mean, that you have the show band. You still have the show band. You still
that's party, like a party wedding band. But we'll still do. We'll still with Cue the Music. I guess we'll still do private events if they crop up and things. You know.
I was going to say, of course you will.
Yeah, if it's like someone's party or something.
Exactly.
I can pull it together. We'll do that. But it's the theatre shows.
It's the big theatre, but the theatre's changed so much. I mean, everything during the pandemic. I mean, basically everything stopped, and all the actors that I knew, nobody was working. You know, and that hurts when you don't work, obviously.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's not like a normal job. You just, you know, everybody's got bills to pay. So it's a hard one, that. It really, really is. But thankfully, things are starting to get back together again, which is really good. You know, it's good for everybody. Yeah.
You've had a few concerts, haven't you, in the first sort of leg?
We did Aldershot and Lincoln, Folkestone. Yeah, they all did. Lincoln was a disaster actually for ticket sales, but Aldershot sold out, which was amazing. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Who did that with Maddie or
Aldershot was? I think it was Caroline.
Mm.
Caroline.
Other Caroline.
Money Penny.
Yes,
Money Penny. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Caroline, thank you so much for...
Thank you.
No, not at all. It's lovely to meet you all. And I look forward to meeting you.
Yes, you in Bradford. Absolutely. Well.
We will see you in Bradford.
Yeah. We can't wait.
Fabulous. Well, take care. And Warren, talk to you very soon. And have a... No, it's not the weekend yet. Anyway, have a lovely evening. And talk soon. Take care.
Bye-bye, Caroline.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you're enjoying Really 007, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Look us up at Really007Pod.
when we first started doing the shows, both Maddie and Caroline, we'd after the show, we always do like a bit of a meet and greet. And the guys would come up, Bond fans would come up, and I would be sort of, I kind of try and just chaperone them a little bit and just kind of, you know, I don't want to say like be a bouncer or anything, but I just kind of just, I'm just there to support them really, as well as chatting to people. And sometimes people come up and they are literally shaking.
Yeah.
When they speak to her. And I'm like, and because I know them really well now, and they, you know, they're almost like a adopted aunt, all of them really. Yeah. Really, really good friends now. And it, and but they're just so down to earth, all of them, and so approachable.
Yeah.
And you know, you see people that they're just genuinely like terrified and in awe. And it, and it, you just feel like saying, look, it's okay, you just be yourself, because they're just so cool, you know.
Yeah, no... from my experience, they seem to really understand the fandom as well, the fan base. They're so, like you said, approachable, and
yeah,
and they're not just strictly all about the film they were in either. They sort of, once they're in one film, they feel like they belong to the franchise, and therefore they belong to the fans, and it's just one huge thing that everyone's a part of. Yeah. And you know, on their part, that's, it's so humble of them.
Yeah, definitely, they really are, and It's just lovely to see them in action, really. It's, you know, I would say don't meet your heroes, but as you say, all the Bond, I think 99% of all the Bond guys I've met from the Bond world have all just been wonderful people. Just so chill.
Maybe it's because, you know, the Broccolis, and they treated everyone so well, didn't they, on set? There was a real family feel on set, and it's just spread, and I think they feel part of that world and they want to give a lot back. You know, they're really proud, though. They're really proud of what they've done, because it's something you would be proud of, isn't it? The legacy of the Bond films. It's one of the few sort of franchises which has been going so long now.
The other thing that was interesting, though, as well, is that chatting to them, it's only really something that's kind of come around in the last 10 years or so. Like prior to that, they were saying that they weren't really involved in the community and doing these fan events and things, because it weren't really happening. And I think that it was kind of, I can't remember if Karen or Maddie said this, but things like the Blu-rays coming out and DVDs coming out and people having access to them at home were kind of what really kicked it all off again. Plus then the arrival of the internet and social media. And kind of really kicked it all into. So now that the whole sort of signing circuit and those meet and greets and stuff has kind of opened up a whole new area that wasn't there before.
Fantastic. Well, Caroline mentioned obviously that she's compared some of the concerts. Was she there? I mean, it's an amazing thing to have done, but it's also sad because you performed at Roger Moore's official memorial event, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We didn't have a compare or anything. We did. What did we do? We did three things. We did All Time High, For Your Eyes Only, and then we did Bond 77 as everyone was walking out, because that was his play on play off music for his one man tour that he was doing. And they asked us if we'd play that on the way out. And what was really funny is that, as I say, it was supposed to be as people were leaving, but we started playing Bond 77 and no one would leave. You know, a few did the main DVC, but a lot of people still, I can still remember people like Gloria Hendry just stood there just going,
wow.
Like, yes, this is awesome. The whole day was just incredible, very emotional and surreal. And, you know, it was such a private, intimate event for close friends and family. And I've always said I felt like we were there representing fans, because it wasn't open to fans or anything. It wasn't like you get a ticket or something. But, you know, we'd been almost given the golden ticket of being asked to play. And, you know, Roger Moore was very much my Bond growing up. I would say he's not my favorite now, but growing up as a child, that was that was my era. So he was my Bond from my childhood. So I felt like I was, you know, there representing everybody who's a fan to do it. So.
Was that nerve wracking? My word, it must.
Yeah, it was actually. And you hear the music have this, the guys in the band have this incredible thing of, no matter what, at whatever the bar I set them, whatever the challenge is, they always seem to not only meet the challenge but exceed it. Whether it was on Her Majesty's Secret Service 50th anniversary, or Roger Moore's event, or other things that we've done in the past as well, where it's been really high pressure, and I don't know what it is, because it's not something that we talk about or we even I have to kind of psych people up. But it just seems that whenever we're in that situation, everyone just goes, right, this is what we're doing it for. You know, this is why I became a musician. Mm. Moments like this, they rise to that challenge. And there was just this moment when we were waiting to start the first piece. And I was conscious of the fact that, you know, there was royalty there. There was Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson. There was all these different guys from the Bond world.
Goodness me.
David Williams. And I stood there on stage and I had the moment where I was like, wow, this all started because of an idea I had, you know, back in the 90s. And here we are. And then I suddenly thought, you know, I mean, I'm like such a stickler for detail and I make sure everyone's got everything they need. We've got the best equipment. The parts are immaculate. Everyone gets links to the parts, demos. They can learn everything. But as we're sort of standing there waiting to play, I was thinking, there is literally nothing I can do at this point. I am totally reliant on the people around me not like bottling it, you know, rabbit in the headlights. And I suddenly thought, if it all goes wrong, it's all my fault because it's me that said we can do this, you know, and it's me that put it all together. And I, for the first time and only time in my entire life, I suddenly had this tightness across my chest. And I thought, wow, this must be like what it feels like before a heart attack or something, you know. But then we started the first note of the first number and everyone just went, you know, went for it. And it was brilliant. But I'll tell you something else, actually, it just occurred to me. One of the other funny things that happened, we were waiting to start this memorial service and it was only about an hour and we were playing halfway through it. And my lead singer, Matt Walker, the male, and of course we weren't doing any male songs because it was the two female songs, but he also does percussion. He's an amazing percussionist. Mm. And his wife was expecting a baby and she was due 5 days after the event. He literally lived about 20 minutes away. So we're like, let's just take a gamble because you know, it'll be okay. And the chances are you're either going to know by then or it's going to be, it'd be really unbelievable if it happened like at that moment. Of course.
Oh, no.
5 minutes to the point, I think it was like 3 o'clock start, 5 to 3, I kid you not, his phone goes and it's saying my waters have just broken.
Oh, no way.
No.
I was like, look, mate, just go. We'll manage that percussion. And so he said, it was a 20-minute drive. And he always tells the story brilliantly. And I said, no, so it was a 12-minute drive that day. they were having a home birth. And I think he got back just in time. And apparently the midwife opened the front door. And, of course, he's there, stood there in full DJ. And she looked him up and down. She said, well, if I'd known we were getting dressed up, I'd have worn my frock. literally just got in time just to catch.
Oh, amazing.
My word.
Oh, wow, that's traumatic as well.
Yeah.
So you said how you started. So where did the idea come from then?
Well, I already ran Karen mentioned it a minute ago. I already ran a party band called the London Show Band. And it was very much just doing kind of typical weddings, birthday parties and that sort of thing. And I was kind of looking around for something to add as like a second string to it that had a real strong identity. And at the time I was just coming to the end of my time at music college and they had a James Bond soundtrack CD that was just right on a loop. It was the songs just on a loop in the students' bar.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I was already a massive Bond fan by that, massive Bond music fan. And I thought, what about doing a James Bond tribute band? No one's ever done it. anywhere in the world. And I thought, you know, why don't I create that? And that's really, in a nutshell, where it sort of came from. I mean, I spent about 2 years transcribing the music. And even from the word go, although it was predominantly 90% all songs, I think before I'd even finished all the songs, I'd already got into the set Bond 77, Flight into Space. Yeah, I think we had Capsule in Space. And maybe one other that's slipping my mind at the moment. Oh, yeah, 007. Yeah, 007.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
So those ones were always in there from the start. And I can remember when we did the first couple of rehearsals, and there were guys there that were Bond, appreciated Bond. They wouldn't call them Bond fans like us. And they were like, why are we doing this 007 and captions? But who's going to know space? You know, and I was like, no, you got it. This is amazing music. You got to trust me.
Yeah.
And we would do events in the early days where we would play for a Bond themed event, and we would be playing Caption Space, and you could see people going, what is this? And it wasn't really till we started putting those videos out onto YouTube of all the songs and the other cues. I mean, some of the early videos, when I look back at them now, I mean, if they're not on YouTube anymore, I've still got them on a hard drive. I could cringe when I look at them, because they're like, you know, the difference between where we were 18 years ago and now is just you know, day and night. But they did serve a purpose, because even back then, we were getting the really strong recognition all around the world with Bond fans that were kind of becoming aware of it. And then, you know, one thing kind of led to another. And then eventually, about eight years ago now, we did another set of videos with a better high quality of video capture and playing and stuff. And then it just really started to snowball quite quickly with we really got picked up by, you know, podcasts like yourselves, and all around the world people started showing an interest, especially as, you know, I'm quite active in the community myself. I've done quite a few different Bond music podcasts, and I really enjoy talking about it, and I really enjoy engaging and going along to events where time, you know, and commitments permit. And it just kind of really went from there. We got invited to a few things, like playing at Bond Stars at Pinewood, and then the Roger Moore Memorial, and then on a Massive Secret Service 50th anniversary. And all of these things just beyond my wildest dreams, really, but they've all kind of fed into the journey.
Please tell us more about the Peace Gloria concert. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you can't even find the words to describe just how incredible it was. I mean, it's no word of exaggeration to say, with the exception of my children being born, it was the most incredible experience of my life, the most incredible weekend I've ever had. Because if you think about the fact that we were celebrating a 50th anniversary of a Bond film with the main lead actor there, and then other cast and crew and people like John Glenn and what have you there at the actual location where it was filmed, which is also, you know, you could take a location, but then you take probably the real mecca for Bond fans. I think there's probably a couple, but that one probably sits in the top three and top one.
Yeah.
And then you put it all that into the melting pot. It's just a one-off. Like, it will never, nothing like it will ever happen again. You're never going to get all those things line up. You know, you're never going to get a former Bond at an event, especially not a 50th anniversary one now. So it was, it was just a once in a lifetime opportunity. And it was, you know, the 200 or so people that were there that come from all over the world. It was like, you could just see the collective release valve just going off all weekend. And it was just an unbelievable high. I can't really use any more words to describe it than that. I'm just so honored. Yeah. So glad that I was there.
To unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more.
Yeah, in fact, I've said this a few times, but afterwards I really struggled for quite a while to find where my point in the rest of my life, what the point in the rest of my life
was.
Such a high, and it came, I think everyone that was there, I talked to a few people and they all felt it. It was like, how, we're never going to experience anything like that again. Like,
lockdown and all that.
Well, even before them, even before lockdown, it was, you know. And you know what, the thing that actually turned it around for me, and I thought there are still some good things to do out there, was the Secret Cinema. Did you guys, any of you guys do?
No, we are a bit far away. We are going to Charles to see License to Kill, so that's one we're really looking forward to. But yeah, Secret Cinema sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Was that for Casino Royale?
It was incredible. Yeah. I was three times in the end, and it was every time was a different experience because you got to go around and they had the absolute spitting image of people from the film, characters from the film. So you know, you could find yourself talking to, I don't know, my mind's going blank now, but I mean, any character from the film.
The chief.
Well, in the third time I went, I ended up playing across the poker table from him. Because I'm like scary,
intimidating.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I didn't even know how to play poker, so I lost straight. I just put my wife was with me on that one. She's like, you know, I said, I don't care. I'm playing the sheep.
Did he have his inhaler and everything?
I'll be happy if I get out of here alive. Let alone, I don't care whether. I don't know if he actually had an inhaler, but yeah, I bet he did have it as a prop. I bet you.
Yeah,
I bet you I bet you he pulled it out, but I didn't actually see him.
Just tell.
But you got like kind of little missions to go off and do as well.
All right.
But you, every time you went, you could actually have a different experience if you wanted it. It was unbelievable. So yeah, that was the point. Was like, oh, okay, so yeah, there are still some things in life that are.
Yeah.
Yeah. This obviously warrants from your experience being, you know, the person leading the orchestra and putting that on Her Majesty's Secret, so that special event on, but like you mentioned, the 200 fans that made that you have made that experience them one of the most special moments of their life. And you know, that's
played
what
a little that, part. There were so many things. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure, but you know, it's obviously testament to the amazing music from the Bond films and everything like that. But it's what you're doing is bringing that music to the fans in a, you know, that we don't get any other opportunity to sit and enjoy and absorb that music. Like sort of Tom said before, you know, songs, yes, and a few tribute nights from orchestras. But when you're kind of a dedicated orchestra that are putting this on for a dedicated fan base, it's something more, it's something far more special. And like I started by saying, you've created something that will live with those fans forever, which is, you know, huge congratulations, Warren.
Thank you so much. One of the things that we did actually there was that we did 20 minutes of music from the film. We did things like This Never Happened to the Other Fella, Starcase, Try. I'm trying the other cues that we did in there. There's quite a few, and obviously we have all the time in the world.
What about Dino Christmas Trees? Was that?
La 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 la. It's funny you should say that. So we were going to do it as one of the encore numbers, and how cool this would have been. All the Angels of Death that were there, and there was probably five of them.
Whoa.
We'd line them up, and they were going to come and sing the crying part. But the evening went on so long that they got one of the cable cars down, and by the time we got there, they were like, "Oh, they've gone to bed." So, but they'd rehearsed it and everything. They were taking it so seriously. I was like, "Look, we don't need to rehearse it. Just come up, and all you got to do is go la 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 la." And if you know from the recording, it's not exactly beautifully sung or anything, is it?
Yeah. So would you say that is your favourite Bond score, film score, or, you know, and also including the songs in that as well?
Well, they're two, for me, that I would categorise them differently. So my favourite score would be, and it's over the last couple of years, it's jostled between Thunderball and Majesty's.
Right, yeah. I both think outstanding.
I think it probably is Majesty's now. It was Thunderball for a very, very long time. But I think all my experiences of doing Majesty's has kind of probably maybe just elevated it slightly. Yeah. Songs maybe slightly differently now. I think License to Kill is my favourite to perform. Diamonds is my favourite to the original. Yeah. What about all of you guys? What scores and songs are you fans of?
Well, I would always go for a John Barry score. I find it really difficult. The two that you've mentioned are absolutely incredible. Then as you go through, like Moonraker, I'm a big fan of, I'm a big fan of his final three scores as well. Yeah, you know, in the Joel Glenn films. I think they're absolutely magnificent. And even by the end for Living Daylights, you know, he's writing three original songs, co-writing three original songs. And something we bleat on about, and I bleat on about, what I love is a composer who co-writes the theme song so that the melody then is incorporated so magnificently within the score.
Yeah.
And I think the last time we had that properly was David Arnold for You Know My Name, which works really well. So, yeah, I'm sorry, I've done a broad brush answer there, but yeah.
What about Tom and Harry?
Go on, Harry.
I don't know if I could choose. I would agree with Matt. Obviously, it's definitely John Barry. I honestly can't say. The earlier ones are sort of... I honestly don't know. The early ones are sort of richer and deeper and sort of extremely special. But when you approach those later ones, the John Glenn ones that Matt mentioned, and you're sort of getting electric guitars in there, like on A View to a Kill, the way it sort of evolved excites me. And it's kind of a different kind of action music. I don't know, because... It's funny, like when we were young children, we'd put on a soundtrack and sort of play fight to it and things like that. And I think the latter John Glenn type ones really get you up for doing a play fight, you know, pretending you're on atop the Golden Gate Bridge and things like that.
Yeah,
it's a very difficult one to answer, but I've not answered probably.
For me, I think nearly all of them, for all 25, are amongst the best soundtracks of any film. And even, you know, like the Bill Conti For Your Eyes Only, I wouldn't change it. You know, obviously you would always want John Barry there, but the License to Kill one is perfect for that film. You
Live
know,
and Let Die.
Change that. You've got the Marvin Hamlisch one, of course. And David Arnold did a great job continuing it on. I think a lot of fans would have loved him to just stay on.
Oh, yeah.
Another way, wouldn't it? But, yeah, for me, I think we've been watching them all in the cinema every week, and just to hear, I mean, particularly Thunderball and You Only Live Twice, these last two, it's just on a different level. You know, you're so lucky. You've got Sean Connery, you've got Japan or Bahamas, Ken Adams sets, you know, and then you've got John Barry's music. And I think the two songs from Thunderball are amongst my very, very favourite. Living Daylights, If There Was a Man, and the title song. Absolutely love it. I'm a big fan of Moonraker, the song. I love the ballads. But I couldn't choose one. I mean, even the one, like John Barry himself said, he wasn't keen on The Man with the Girl and the Gun, but I think it's brilliant.
Scores, there's some good bits, definitely some good bits in the score as well. There is, let's be honest, there isn't a bad John Barry score for at all, let alone for Bond, but they all are so different. Actually, when you it's hard really to compare like the Living Daylights with Goldfinger or Thunderball, because they are so different.
Yeah,
whilst yet being under the same banner, you know. It's I do think though, if you're being hypercritical, I guess I would say, and bear in mind when I say this, that View to Kill and Living Daylights are definitely two of my favourite Barry scores. But he does start to recycle stuff within the films a bit more as he goes on. You know, like things like He's Dangerous are also kind of the same as, what's the one, the ski?
Underwater.
Snow Job.
No, Snow Job. Yeah.
And then Golden Gate Fight. Yeah. It's the same theme three times. Yeah. But
there's a great theme.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't think he does as much of that in the earlier films, particularly. But I mean, The Living Daylights is still just a fantastic score. And what's great about it is that there's the two extremes, I think, are brilliant. I think like the chase music of Living Daylights is really groovy, fantastic, incredible use of the theme tune that, you know, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Like with that beat underneath, brilliant.
Wow. But
then, you know, all the stuff in Afghanistan and stuff, all that kind of really almost, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word, but that, you know, all that kind of really epic music, you know, is all like kind of almost like Lawrence of Arabia type.
Sweeping,
massive string sounds and tunes. It's just incredible when you put that on, and, you know, it just blows your mind.
Warren, can I ask you your thoughts on particularly the three most recent scores since David Arnold's era? I mean, it'd be interesting to see what you thought about David Arnold as well, but because I think there's been a bit of a shift in that perhaps what the biggest shift is in terms of giving the amount of power given to the director so that they then say who they want as composer, which is how it often works. And so when Sam Mendes came on, obviously he's a very, you know, renowned director, and he would have said, I imagine, Thomas Newman's my normal director, composer. I want him involved. And then I think for No Time to Die, originally he had, was it Dan Roma before, as he often does, Hans Zimmer came in as, you know, sort of emergency. So I just wondered your thoughts on particularly those last three scores. And
so there's kind of, again, there's kind of two sides to the questions, you know, my own emotional reaction as a music lover, as a fan of Bond. And then there's the kind of more of the read up kind of, you know, what I know from talking to people and stuff as well, which kind of, you know, you understand more why some decisions are made. You know, for example, as you quite rightly pointed out, the reason that Thomas Newman got it was absolutely because Sam Mendes is that's who they work together. Do I like his scores? No, I don't. I mean, I'm not a fan of them at all. In fact, I've tried to like them so much over the years. There are elements in them, both films, that where there are bits that I think, oh yeah, that, you know, I like that bit. And, you know, the opening pre-credits music for Spectre, I think, is brilliant. There's some stuff in Rome that I think is really, really good.
Yeah.
There's it's been a while since I've done this, and my brain's not really working well today. But you know the coffin scene in Skyfall. It's got a name. The track,
sort of British sounding one.
Kind of that chorale. It'll come to me in a minute. The name of the cue, but it's I think that's really, really good. But a lot of the other stuff, it just leaves me a bit cold. And I think what it is, over the years, the way that film music is kind of being written, it's moved away from the harmonic tension that Barry used to create with these chords and everything else, to more of a rhythmic tension. That's kind of a thing across all kind of modern action movies. You know, if you think of the end of Skyfall, a lot of that kind of last scene around the Thames, you've got that kind of really hard rhythmic. You know, that's tension, because it's like, you know, kind of that makes you tense.
Yeah.
So it creates the emotional reaction in the audience. But it, when you come out, you don't walk down the street going. You guys come out of Thunderball going.
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah.
You'll move twice last night.
Yeah.
You know. It's,
singing all those tunes. And but you know, you're comparing Thomas Newman, who's obviously a talented composer, but you're comparing him to probably the greatest tune writer of all time in film music. Although John Williams is amazing and writes probably more epic scores, in terms of just writing a simple, beautiful melody, you know, everything John Barry wrote in his films, there's a kind of melodic feel to it, that, you know, every single little element is memorable. You sing it back. Whereas Thomas Newman has come out and said that his approach is that it needs to accentuate and accompany what's on the screen at the time, but it shouldn't distract, and it shouldn't be memorable, in his opinion. You know, it should, it's almost like in M's office, you've got all those decorations in the background that you don't actually really notice until the 50th time you've watched it.
Yeah.
But you're very much aware of it. It's the scene dressing, but your focus is on what the dialogue and what's going on between the two main you know, protagonists. And that's his approach. And I don't like that approach for Bond, but I understand that it is a legitimate way of scoring a film. And there are people out there that really like Thomas Newman's score. Moving on to the latest one, I think the reason that Hans Zimmer picked it up, and I can see him coming back and doing the next one, possibly someone of a similar kind of ilk. I mean, there's not really anybody out there that's got his street cred. But the thing with him, that he brings, a bit like now every choice of person that performs the song, is that there's a PR machine that comes with that really helps push and propel the film to more people and sell, you know, get more bums on seats. And, you know, whenever you're on Facebook and you see these debates about who the next, or, you know, the question that you'll probably ask me at some point is, who do I want to record the next Bond song? It's got to the point where the opinion of who you'd like to do it is completely irrelevant. You can almost go on Instagram and just look up who's got the most followers. Yeah. And that's probably where your money could go, because from a point of view, and I, you know, someone that tries to market concerts, I understand it makes complete you know, business sense, marketing sense, to go, Billie Eilish has got, however, you know, 400 million followers or whatever on Instagram. Plus, she's approaching a demographic which is going to help get more people in, because people like you, the four of us, are all, you know, we're all a sold seat. You know, we're easy.
Yeah.
You don't have to market to us. You know that we're going to go.
Yeah.
But for a film like No Time to be a success and kind of hit the $1 billion figure, which they need, they really need to get in that next generation. And the angle for that is somebody like Billie Eilish. So it's never going to change. And like the real hardcore Bond fans like us find that hard to deal with, because, you know, there's those that would just have Shirley Bassey back every single time. Even now, there's people there.
Yeah, there is, isn't there?
Yeah.
And she's amazing, but, you know, you're not going to... going to achieve the goal that they're trying to achieve.
The thing is that I absolutely agree. I do feel that Bond as a franchise is unique from, like, I understand how action music has changed over the last decade or so, but like the tuxedo and like, you know, the shaken not stirred, the pre-title sequence, well, these things belong to Bond. And, you know, the music is one of those things. I don't think the music is something that should be cast aside or reduced in any way. I don't think that, and I understand.
Like
that.
You wouldn't do for a Star Wars film.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's that classic score, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And even if we're going sort of in a rhythmic drum action fashion at the moment, I think what the Bond films need to do more now is think, we need to be creating things that are timeless. We need to be creating things that are going to last decades. Mm. And I'm sure, you know, when you look at your repertoire, you're doing music that means stuff to so many over spanning decades. And whether you can do that with music from Thomas Newman.
No, would never do any Thomas
Newman. And I'm a Newman fan, and I'm a huge Zimmer fan. But I don't think either of them have made much timeless music there that you'd be playing decades and would be sampled in songs and things like that. And I just want them to get that bigger picture right. And it comes back to melodies and harmonies and things like that. And that's my own honest point of view on the music. I think the music, and obviously I don't need to tell you, Warren, the music is such a huge piece of the it's not just something that you upgrade to fit modern action films. The music itself is a character of the Bond, you know, it's as much a character as M and Moneypenny, and it's as much a part of the fabric.
I think, Harry, you've like really captured and articulated my feelings really well on it, because what you said there really highlights, I think, what I was trying to say earlier on in the music, even Zimmer's score. And I actually really like Zimmer's score, especially in comparison. It was much better than the two prior, in my opinion. But you're right. It's very, I think it was really enjoyable in the moment, more enjoyable than Newman's in the moment, but it's not timeless. Mm-hmm. And all the other scores that we've been talking about, like particularly obviously the Barry ones, but even Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
Dry's Only is a bit of an acquired taste, and I really like it. But all these other ones, they're all definitely timeless. But, you know, I think that Zimmer's one will be one that it was really enjoyable at the time, but it's not one you're going to put on a lot. But I do think there was a real conscious effort there to try and bring some of the traits that we want as Bond fans. And in some ways, I actually felt they probably went a little bit too on the nose with it by just
the Honor Majesty's music.
Yeah.
What about that?
Well, it felt shoehorned in, I thought. But it's one of those ones I've gone backwards and forwards with. I don't know about you guys, but there was one point when I thought it really was just too on the nose. And then I went through a period where I loved the film. I thought it was the best film I've seen in years, and I really got it. And then I've now kind of more gone somewhere in between. I'm definitely a fan of No Time to Die, but I think that what they need to do is take the formula and create new moments, not take moments that were previously brilliant and go, oh, this is almost a two-for-one deal here. We can just take that idea and stick it in this film, and we're going to get...
Like, for example, Roger, you never see Roger in an Aston Martin, because they're not... I know it's a bit different because he was, you know, there wasn't such a gap, but, like, he was creating his own iconic moments. The car we've talked about in The Spy Who Loved Me, that was his Goldfinger. That was him making new iconic moments. And I think that's what we'd like to see from for the new film, rather than sort of half harking back to the past, but then also trying to do new things like, you know, and I'm not saying I disagree with all these things, but, you know, M dying, Felix dying, Bond having a child, and then ultimately Bond dying, if you know what I mean.
Blofeld.
So, yeah.
You know what's a good example of getting it right? It's like in M's office in No Time to Die, having a painting of the previous M on the wall.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's an example of how you do it right, yeah. I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, subtle, because, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think with some of the things they did with that film, we're getting a bit more into the film rather than the music, but I think it applies to the music, is that I think what they did was they were trying to tick two boxes. They were trying to make Bond more current and incorporate more liberal things, as we know. I hadn't got a problem with any of that, by the way. I thought that Lashawn Lynch's character was brilliant and all of that stuff, but they kind of ticked a lot of boxes to try and appeal to a wider demographic and make Bond more current. But then I think what they've tried to go is, how do we not alienate our core kind of Bond fan? And they've gone, oh, okay, let's stick in on the Majesty's Secret Service, because that's their favourite film and they'll love it. And it's like, we've got a bit more about us than that, but we don't need it to be like round the face.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for me, what the scene when they play the over and out kind of cue from Majesty's, I can kind of understand it, because he's coming back into Her Majesty's service. But I would have thought it'd have been more appropriate to, if they really wanted to do it, was to bring back the 007.
Yes.
Thing.
Yeah.
Because that is for different Bonds.
You know? It is. Yeah, it doesn't belong to a specific movie.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, because that's the thing, isn't it? Majesty's is a theme for that movie. But I think the way they approached it was that they were kind of thinking of it as a theme for him being in the Majesty's service. But I feel for them a little bit, because I also understand what they're trying to do with it. I mean, they're trying to give us something that they think we want, which is really cool that they're trying to do that. Because sometimes I don't think they've always done that. I think they've kind of got a bit wrapped up in what, you know, what they want to do rather than what's best for what we kind of want. You know, as the end of the day, we are the customers, aren't we?
I just can't think it was Hans Zimmer's decision to put the Honor Majesty's music in. Whereas before, the music was all down to John Barry, wasn't it? He wasn't told what to put in where, was he?
I don't think that Zimmer was told to put this in, though. I think it was his choice.
Yes.
Even to use We Have All the Time in the World over the end credits?
I'm not sure about that one.
It's in the script, isn't it? Those lines.
I'm sure
you're right about that one. I'm sure that probably came. But as I understand it, a lot of the other that I've heard, that a lot of the other stuff was his choice, like bringing in the Majesty's theme when was him and I believe it was his idea to bring in the little bit of Vespa's theme.
That's
the kind of thing, isn't it? That made sense, and it was just enough. It was like, brilliant. Mm.
You're listening to Real 007, and this is Mariam Darbo, Cara Milovi from The Living Daylights.
So, what would you do if it were you? Not what do you think they will do, but what would you do musically, composer wise? It sort of feeds into what you would do with the films in general, but what would you do composer-wise, singer-wise? I don't know. I'd be interested to know your thoughts.
Well, composer-wise, I wouldn't go back with Zimmer, definitely. And I would go back to David Arnold, because he's proven, he does a brilliant job, he gets it, but I don't think they're going to. And I think for whatever, they've made up their mind, they've moved on, and I think it's a real shame. But so if they're not going to go back, I would like to see them. I mean, my first choice really, my mind is going blank today. Trying to think of his name, the guy that did Solo and Incredibles.
Oh, yeah, Michael Giacchino.
Michael Giacchino.
Oh,
thank
sorry.
You.
Yeah,
he did Rogue One. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I thought, I don't know what you guys thought of Rogue One. I thought that was not, I said Solo. Yeah, of course. My brain's not working tonight, folks.
It's fine,
I thought the Rogue One score was really, really good. But I think he had quite a short time frame to turn it around. And there are bits of it that don't quite work. And I think people really went for him. He got a bit of negative press about that. They really went for the stuff that didn't work. But actually, the stuff that did work, I thought, was brilliant.
Yeah. He replaced Alexandra.
Desplat.
Who's also a great composer and would be a good choice.
He's done other franchises, hasn't he?
Planet of the Apes.
Mission Impossible. He's done.
He gets it. Yeah,
he knows how to respect a franchise's music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking up. I can't think of. I don't know whether it's been a long day or something, but my brain's gone mad as well. Who's the guy that did The Mandalorian? That's another one that's gone from
Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah. So you tip. As soon as you got it, my tip of my tongue, I've got it. I thought his music was amazing on that, and
yeah.
I've watched quite a few bits and pieces of him on YouTube and his composing methods and stuff. And that guy's seriously a genius. And I think he would do something really interesting. And he can write thematic material as well. Like that theme is one of only a few handful of examples I can really think of in recent times where someone's actually written a thematic theme.
Yeah.
You know, and it's good. So yeah, I wouldn't go back with Hans Zimmer, but I think they will. I think that's where they'll go. Do you know what? I'm not even going to give a name for the song choice. But what I will say is that I think they have to, and I really hope that they go with an upbeat song to start.
Yes.
Because
you need one as well, don't you?
Yeah, if you think about Daniel Craig's, it's just got more. The songs have got more depressing.
Yeah.
You start with a depressing one with the next one. Where the hell can they go from there? You know.
Even though you know, Casino Royale is quite a heartbreaking film in many ways, but the theme songs gives it such a kick, and with that title sequence, it makes it so good.
Can you remember how you felt about it when the first time you saw it? That song, in the context of the film, when you saw it at the cinema.
The title sequence is brilliant as well, isn't it?
I think it's one of the best, and I thought,
I had my concerns going into the film, and that, in the early stages, won me over.
Yeah. First time I saw it, I was a bit like, oh, this is doesn't really necessarily feel like a normal Bond song.
No.
But it's got to be actually one of the best, hasn't it? It's up there.
Certainly in recent years. For me, it's right up there.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
It's best, isn't it? The Daniel Craig year is best, I think.
And
you know, like I say, and I don't think they'll do it where they'll get the composer to be involved in the creation of the song.
Well, they did it. They did it with No Time to Die, though.
He
orchestrated. He did all the orchestration for the strings and all of that.
Yeah.
From that. And there is, it's not littered like a Barry film, but there is some of that brought in.
I definitely appreciate that. But I mean, like to the extent of John Barry writing the melodies, and then you know the song comes from there rather than the other way around. I just can't see that would happen. You know, giving to Ed Sheeran. Heaven forbid. this is the melody. This is the melody I've come up with. You know, now, you know, how can we make I just can't see that would happen.
I'll tell you one thing I did think with No Time to Die, I don't know what you guys thought, but parking aside anybody's feelings about the actual song, whether they liked it or not, I don't think there's ever been a song actually in the entire series that fed into the narrative of the film better than that song did in terms of the lyrics. And it almost plugs that 5-year gap between when...
Yeah.
The train leaves the station to the when he
that's true.
I thought that was a really clever and cool thing that they did with that, and it just goes to show if you bring these elements in and say look, this is because they obviously Billie Eilish and Phineas saw that opening sequence, they allowed them to see it, they're actually able to put their song in context. You were never wrong. some of the songs actually have no relevance at all. Wrong, you know, some of the lyrics make no sense at all.
You're right, though. If it was just a massive upbeat song after you just got on the train,
yeah,
it wouldn't be right at all. Yeah. Would it? So it has to fit the film, of course.
We actually, I don't know if you've seen it, but if you go on YouTube, we actually did a song for No Time to Die, an original. We'd always been asked, oh, you should write some. We've never done it. We've always done covers, but we've actually got an original. Oh. That we wrote and recorded before Billie Eilish had even been announced. And it's an upbeat song, but with it kind of has that kind of more downbeat verse and then goes to the chorus, and it's more of a defiance. Because all we knew at the time when we wrote it was the synopsis that had been released, that we knew Bond had left service and that he'd split from Madeline and that he was in isolation in the Caribbean and stuff. And I knew from the word go, I knew if Daniel Craig was coming back, his last film, I just got the vibe from the word go that he was going to always go by dying.
Yeah.
So we kind of incorporated that on a song. But yeah, if you get a chance.
I was gonna ask you about that, Warren. Yeah. You know, obviously with your background in music and your love of the music of the franchise, how much you tinker with, you know, a new villains theme that you've composed in your bedroom or, you know, some new action. Are you always kind of imagining a new Bond film with new music? Do melodies come to your head at all?
No, that's not really my area of music, really. I'm quite a reasonable arranger and orchestrator of other people's work and performer, obviously. And I'm more the guy that gets everybody in, you know, comes up with the idea and brings it all together. There are guys in the band. I mean, there's the keyboard player in my band, Jez, is a really, really clever composer, and he's done a few little film music-y competitions where, you know, if you heard it, you'd be like, oh, this is really, I mean, it's really good. It's really, really good. But again, you know, I mean, he came into music as a performing, amazing keyboard player. I mean, he's on tour with Susie Quattro and things like that. So he's pretty busy with that, but does a little bit of composing on the side and enters a few little things and stuff. But I mean, the world of composing is such a closed shop for film music composing, and there's quite a lot of articles going around about just why it's such a disaster zone at the moment for music that they're producing, because, you know, a lot of the time they get so much stricter guidelines to write to, and there's nowhere near the room for maneuver that they used to have. And in the old days, I think, you know, when a film kind of got to the composer, there wasn't as much editing now as what there is now. Now there's like a million cuts. You know, the music is kind of written in a way that it just gets chopped up and moved all the time, and it's almost like a composer can compose a score and send it through, and then the editor will then chop it up however they want it. You know, it must be quite soul destroying as a composer to write a theme, and then when it comes back, you know, they've maybe turned it round backwards and chopped the middle section out and then sliced it onto the end. If you think about you can't say it never happened, because if you even think about Dr. No, the James Bond theme in the titles has been sliced and diced up into a completely different order, hasn't it? So, you know, imagine how that must feel when you've got, I mean, those 2 minutes of the James Bond theme that John Barry, let's be honest, that he wrote, but he
legally didn't write. Yeah.
No, yeah, he arranged and orchestrated, I'll say that. Sorry, Monty. Don't. You know, you imagine that is 2 minutes of perfection, absolute genius perfection, lightning in a bottle stuff. You send it off to the film. When you go and watch the films, they've just bastardized it into this completely different thing. Imagine how you'd feel.
Yeah.
You know,
so you've said License to Kill is your favourite to play. I presume that as a trumpet player, because of the big brass opening, you know, and the so is that why? And also, what are your other ones? I'm sure you love playing them all, but what are your other favourites to play?
Yeah, no, the reason for License to Kill is actually nothing to do with me, actually. It's more about the overall thing as the band. I mean, particularly for Kerry, you know, you'll when you come to the show in a couple of weeks, you'll see it. It's she really penetrates right into you in it, and just takes you off into the stars.
I've seen the performances. Really good.
Only on YouTube, sadly. Can't wait to see it live.
So the thing, and I always say to these people as well, like, the thing with Cue the Music is that there's a thing that you just can't get from YouTube, and it's when you're in the room and you feel the vibe that we have with the audience, where it kind of works in the circle where they can feel the energy, and so they get more pumped up, and the more pumped up they get, the more we feed off of that. And by the end of the show, you've kind of just been taken on this emotional and adrenaline fueled journey that just doesn't come across in a video, but that's really encapsulated never more so than License to Kill. And you know, we get to the end of that and there's just this almighty release valve in the audience that goes off as they kind of, you know, celebrate it or whatever, and it's real hairs in the back of the moment, hairs in the back of the neck moment. Say that somebody tries to make a move on you. In the blink of an eye, I'm gonna be there too.
Doing that in
no, we're not doing that one.
You've only got so much time, haven't you? There's so many songs.
The only song we don't do is Die Another Day, and we used to do it.
I was going to ask us,
we used to do it, but it was the only thing I ever got complaints about was people saying, please don't do that. So I was this great video from some. We used to do a thing in the early theatre shows where we used to get videos of people coming out, their reactions, and there's this lovely old couple. And I think they were not such a fan of the modern music. And they said, oh, the first half was amazing. Absolutely. Because you're doing it in chronological order.
Oh, yeah. Right,
first half was absolutely amazing. We loved it. Brilliant. Second half, waste of time. and I just think it was like, and Die Another Day was kind of a big part of that. And more and more people were kind of like, oh, do you really have to? So I kind of got rid of it. And that meant we could put more things in. You know, we do... Yeah. Different tunes every time now. Every concert we do something different in those little gaps. So it could be If There Was a Man, it could be Dirty Love, it could be Bond 77. We had a bit of a Diamonds year last year and going into Aldershot this year. So we've been doing a few cues from Diamonds Are Forever.
Quite right.
Obviously, 50th anniversary, wasn't it, last year? So that was really, really good. You know, I feel like this last tour, I'm just scratching all the little itches I've got left and ticking the boxes off. And by the time we close in October, we'd have done well over 100 cues and songs from a couple of series.
Wow.
I mean, most of them are on YouTube now.
Yeah.
Which you'll know, no one will ever match that just because they're not mad enough.
It's amazing to think that you're covering 60 years of music. That really is incredible.
The great thing is as well, I mean, it's like the band, they're not the sort of geek level of me or you, that, you know, so I'll sometimes turn up with a new obscure song that I've come out, you know, like Dirty Love, and they're like, but then like Kerry and Matt, it's their favourite song, you know, they're always like, oh, can we do Dirty Love? I'm like, well, we've got to change it up a little bit. But
the old couple leaving.
Yeah.
Dirty Love was too much.
No, but actually, do you know what, it always goes down so well.
Oh yeah. And it does.
Of course
it does.
It's a really good foot tapping, uplifting song, isn't it? Dirty love,
What sort of pressure is there to keep it absolutely faithful to the original? Or do you like to, I know you do a bit more jazzy, don't you?
No, we don't. No, we don't do that. Don't say that. You'll put people off. No, we did one CD where we did jazz versions, just something different. We did it and released it. But no, that's not our remit at all. Normally, no, it's absolutely as closely. And I would say the layers of authenticity and detail are so deep that they're actually not perceive it as an audience member. Like if you start peeling the layers off and I sort of showed you how deep it goes down to, you know, tiny notes, quavers from your music, you know, it would blow your mind. But the thing is that whilst you can't necessarily isolate one thing, when you add it all into the mixing pot, I think that's what really gives it that flavor that why people who are Bond fans come and go, you know, just come and go, wow, because of, you know, it's that time and level of detail that we go to down to the second keyboard player playing one bar in the middle of a piece. And I'm like, no, it's not like that. It's got to be like this. Yeah. But within that, there is certain things where we do just take a little bit of a flavor to it. And it might just be taking the energy of a particular thing and just turning it up one notch in a live setting. You get that to a degree anyway. You take the Bond songs, which are amazing, and you're taking them from like a studio recorded kind of sanitized, disciplined, perfect performance in a studio, and then putting it into a live, adding in adrenaline and atmosphere and passion and all of those kind of things, and then the interaction with the audience, and it automatically lifts it from that point of view. Because same if the originals, when you hear those done by the original recording artist live, it's just a different vibe that, you know, you just in the atmosphere. So yeah, it's authentic as absolutely 99.9%, just with that, or 99%, but then with that 1% where we just inject a little bit of flair and just fun things, really, just to kind of lift it a little bit further in the live setting.
The vocalist is obviously different, but it's quite nice to have the same ones, isn't it? So there's a running theme through it as well.
See, that's a great example, because, you know, you talk about authenticity. If you tried to do a James Bond tribute band where you had a Shirley Bassey,
Tom Jones impressionist. Yeah.
First of all, it would sound bloody awful.
Yeah.
You know, it would just sound so, it would be painful.
Yeah.
But secondly, you'd either have to have 26, 24, 25 different artists, or you'd have to have someone who could do all of them.
Yeah.
How would you find a male vocalist that could do Tom Jones, Louis Armstrong, and Monroe?
Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. So, you know, but they do little things with it. Like Matt will do like a little bit of grit and gravel in We Have All Time in the World, but it doesn't sound corny. And Kerry would do a little bit of the extra flamboyant showy kind of thing with the Shirley Bassey song, but it's not a parody.
No, it's a winning combination. It really is the classic music with the live feel, and that's what we're looking forward to most. One big question that
you
know, it always comes up in my head: Surrender or Tomorrow Never Dies?
Definitely Surrender, but I do love Tomorrow Never Dies. I think it's a really great song, but I mean, Surrender, actually, I would probably put it top 10 for me of songs overall.
Tomorrow never dies.
I'm just glad we got them both.
Yeah.
No, it's what back to math says. In those days, even World Is Not Enough, you've got, you know, we have Only Yourself to Blame. I can't put, you don't do that one, do you? I can't.
We have done it. Yeah, yeah.
We've only
done
Myself
it.
To Blame.
Yeah.
I'll yeah, be yeah, we've done it.
Yeah, yeah, I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
It's on YouTube if you want to have a look.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to keep asking which ones you're doing because I want there to be a bit of mystery, obviously. But
yeah. I wouldn't tell you. Well, I can tell you won't be doing that. Are we doing? We're
saving that for London.
Yeah. Yeah.
The big surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but the new ones at Bradford are brand new ones that we've never done. So.
Oh,
how's that?
Say that.
Fantastic. Yeah.
But I think Surrender's is an absolutely awesome song.
Brilliant. Well, before you go, Warren, please just sort of tell us what dates your concerts are on and how you can get tickets and, you know, who's going to be there as well.
Yeah, so we've got 5 dates left, and ridiculously, I can't remember. I'm actually my own website. So if anybody's listening wants to know, if you go to cuethemusicshow.com, apart from anything else, you can go and have a look at all the videos. If you go on there, there's like a videos tab with like over 100 of all the cues. And I mean, there's everything from things like Dawn Raid at Fort Knox to Laserbeam to Wondervert's World War III, Drop in the Ocean. There's a Live and Let Die suite thing.
Oh,
I mean, I could sit here and just read out all the titles, but there's so many. And yeah, you can, if you go on the website, there's a whole list of them, and you click on the song and it takes you straight to YouTube to watch it. So that's so worth doing. But also there's a See the Show tab as well, which gives the dates. So the ones we've got left, we're at Bradford, which of course I'm looking forward to seeing you guys at, which is Sunday the 12th of June. We're in Cheltenham on Sunday the 3rd of July. We're at Hever Castle in Kent on the 5th of August, Friday 5th of August. Buxton Opera House on Monday the 29th of August, which is a bank holiday Monday. And then finally, it's not on sale just yet, should be end of the month. We're going to be Sunday 23rd of October in the West End at, and is this not just perfect, at Her Majesty's Theatre.
Oh.
Wow.
So apt. Oh, yeah. That's brilliant.
That's going to be emotional.
It really is. It's going to be a mega concert. That one will be double-sized band with strings and everything, and music that will just blow everyone's mind. Yeah, it'll be a good one.
My word. Well, we'll give details and links to those. Really do encourage you to come. We've been waiting all lockdown to try and actually go and see you guys. And it's been brilliant watching the videos on YouTube to keep us going in the meantime. So please do follow Cue the Music and catch them. But catch them live while you still can.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we want to see. Like we keep saying, the music is, you know, one of the top, I don't know, 2 or 3 things about the whole franchise that we love. And it wouldn't be the same without it. It's got an amazing back catalogue. These guys are terrific. The vocalist, the instrumentations, you know, the compositions themselves, the arrangements that Warren's done himself. It's all part of the fabric of Bond. And of course, Bond Girls are hosting them as well. So, and at great venues. I mean, one day at the Hever Castle one. I mean, that's astonishing. But even ending in the West End there, that's going to be something special.
Mm.
We will see you at Bradford, Warren. And we can't wait to see you in person.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me tonight. Well, gents, it's been really, really good.
Really good.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.